This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. What an episode we have lined up for you today, from chaos in Madrid to pitch invasions on the South Coast. We've got you covered. Jack Reeve and Mark Langdon to guide you through proceedings once more. Mark, it is a brilliant time of the year and we've been treated to a footballing feast this midweek. Let's start with Real Madrid against Manchester City. What a game once again.
Yeah, it was. Oh, well, you say what a game. I mean, it was a dramatic finish. I was a bit disappointed with the first sort of 65, 70 minutes. It was sort of fascinating rather than thrilling, wasn't it? It felt on the edge.
Standards, don't you? Yeah. I watch Norwich City every week. That was glorious watching that.
Yeah. I suppose maybe because the week before was just so good, but yeah, you know, we spoke off air, Jack, and you said, you know, you always felt it was sort of coming with Real Madrid and, you know, you never write them off. I mean, I had written them off. I didn't feel like they'd done that much in the kind of 88, 89 minutes. They played reasonably well, but, you know, City were in control. They were one goal up. Grealish, you know, has had one cleared off the line, a great save from Courtois. You know, Real Madrid had almost given up, I felt, at that stage. You saw plenty of scenes of, you know, fans departing the Bernabeu. And I don't know if it was Real Madrid's powers of recovery. I don't know if it was Man City just a failure, sort of like, you know, just a mental block that they've got with the Champions League. I mean, I just tend to think it's just one of those things. And I know it's happened a few times now with Real Madrid. And so you'll say, well, how can it be one of those things when it's happened three times in a row? But I think sometimes in football, you know, and Kevin Pelina say this all the time, you know, stuff just happens. And like, you know, you end up getting yourself out of a job when you're in the sort of punditry world, if you just say that. So you have to try to come up with narratives. But, you know, sometimes stuff just happens in football.
But Mark, this, I do understand where you're coming from, but this feels like a regular occurrence now, not only for Manchester City, but Pep Guardiola. Of Guardiola's 11 Champions League eliminations, 8 of those have come in small periods with sudden collapses and sort of flurries and goals. And we're talking 2019, 2020 and 2022. All three of those have been what you would probably call bottling. Now, I know that there are a lot of people that don't like that phrase, but we had a question come in from Rab, who said, can City now be labelled as chokers when under pressure? That he has to have a shout there, Mark.
In the Champions League, yes. I mean, in Premier League terms, I mean that they, you know, when they were pushed hard by Liverpool, was it a couple, you know, was that 99 and 98, you know, when was it 99 points and 98 or 199? I can't remember exactly, but you remember that year when Liverpool pushed them all the way, and City kept winning, didn't they, at the end? So I do think there is a bit of an issue with the Champions League. You know, for Pep, I mean, Pep used to be accused of overthinking it. I don't think he did that last night. I felt he picked the best 11 players when he made his subs. I mean, most managers would try to shut the game down and make those kind of substitutions. And if anything, you know, the Zinchenko and Gundogan sort of plays actually helped City to score that goal, didn't they? They were both involved in the move, you know, that looked like it had won it for them. I do think, though, that there is, like I say, a mental block with City in terms of the Champions League. It feels like they want it so much. And I suppose with every time they don't win it and stuff goes wrong, then the next time you get put into that pressure situation, then you know, you've got sort of all your experience to lean back on is bad experience, isn't it? And, you know, maybe there is something in that. I definitely feel, and I don't know if this is a Guardiola thing or the players, I felt in the Atletico Madrid game and the Real Madrid away game, in both of those matches, City were a little bit too defensive and didn't actually play like City can. And I don't know if that's them almost trying to be too streetwise and trying to themselves maybe overthink it. What I reckon City need to do is remember what gets them into this place in the first instance, and that's by being attacking, dominating the ball, going at teams, committing the fullback. So I do think that they're a little bit edgy in these big Champions League games. And, you know, on this occasion, they were made to pay. But I do want to stress that, you know, after 90 minutes, I felt, you know, if the game finishes 1-0 to Manchester City, which it could quite easily have done, Jack, the chatter today, you would have been asking me questions. Oh, you know, City, that, you know, they've finally found a way to win. You know, they're more streetwise than they used to be. You know, it's a very efficient performance. And so it very fine lines between success and failure in the particularly in the Champions League. And I know that Guardiola's getting plenty of stick, and he'll have to take that on the chin, because, you know, it's another year where he hasn't won the Champions League with a team not called Barcelona, when he had Messi, sort of peak Messi, I suppose, as well, in his ranks. But, you know, he gets to the semi-finals and the final and quarter-finals quite a lot. And I do think if you just keep on getting into those situations, eventually it will drop for them. But they do have to take this criticism, you know, just in the face, because it's going to come. It's a very expensively assembled squad. And I do think it's a little bit unbalanced. You know, when I looked at that bench last night, you know, great players to come on, but it wasn't sort of, you know, change. It wasn't able to change necessarily the dynamic of what they were trying to do. You know, Grealish comes on and, you know, he does something a little bit sort of similar, doesn't he, to a lot of the other midfielders they've got. And this isn't a case of, oh, they should have signed Harry Kane. I do just wonder whether they've left themselves a player short, you know, up front, that can just hold the ball up maybe in those situations, or maybe a more defensive-minded midfielder for when Rodri gets tired. Because I think Fernandinho, you know, he battles hard, but his best days are behind him, aren't they?
Yeah, no, we rarely disagree, Mark, but it's not an anomaly, this. It has to come. It just looks like a mentality issue. It's really interesting you raised there about going away from their style. You see often in golf, don't you, with players coming down the stretch who've taken the lead that maybe haven't been in positions before, and instead of pulling driver, they're taking out 3-iron, and it all goes wrong, to kind of sit on the back foot a little bit. And it did feel that way with Manchester City. Simon got in touch to say, do you think that this defeat will affect the title race for Manchester City?
No, I mean, I wouldn't be sort of back in Liverpool now because of, you know, what happened last night. I mean, you could flip it the other way and go that, you know, they're just going to double down their efforts now to win, you know, the Premier League. I don't think it will have a major impact. I think if it does, it will be on Sunday against Newcastle. But, you know, if they can get that win, I think you quickly get it out of the system and you can, you know, you can carry on, can't you? And, you know, get back to it. It sounds like in your question there, Jack, you felt maybe it would, but I'm not so sure.
No, I agree. I don't think it will necessarily affect the Premier League title race. I do think you're being too kind to Manchester City, though, when it comes to the Champions League. They will have frustrations, though, and particularly around certain time wasting from Madrid. Michael. Michael said, will we ever see a more professional approach to timekeeping? I know this is a real frustration for you as well, Mark.
It is, yeah. I mean, Michael did say he's from Sydney, so I don't know if he was watching me on Stan Sport last night. I was doing the game for them on the Champions League, and, you know, it was the one area that I felt the referee, you know, I mean, you gave three minutes of injury time in the second half of extra time. I mean, Militao went down twice for at least that amount of time. There was unreal time wasting. I don't understand the timekeeping in terms of football. Kevin Pelline wrote about it in the Racing Post last week, when he was sort of just brought to, you know, I suppose, back to the attention, the fact that, you know, the rule of goalkeepers only being able to sort of hold the ball in their hands for 6 seconds still applies. And yet, you quite often see sort of 12, 15 seconds, don't you? I mean, Courtois was just taking 30 seconds over goal kicks. So will we ever see a more professional approach to timekeeping? I think we will, because ultimately the TV companies, the paying viewer, they're the people getting cheated out of it, aren't they? You know, so I would imagine maybe not sort of in the next couple of years, but you know, let's say within the next 10 years, I think there will be a solution that probably involves a stadium clock.
Yeah, spot on. I think the particularly first half stoppage time, it's you never usually sort of see more than a minute or two, and there can be three injuries, bookings. Yeah, it's mad.
Well, you're meant to add on 30 seconds for a goal, aren't you, as well? I mean, and I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not even sure that's the right amount, because, I mean, how long can it take to sort of get the play back underway? And that's without sort of the VAR nonsense that, you know, can... I'm sure they don't add on the right amount of time for VAR decisions.
To be fair, my experiences at Carrow Road this season, I'd be quite happy if they shortened the games rather than lengthened them. Real Madrid will face Liverpool in the final. The Champions League final odds look something like Liverpool 8-15, Real Madrid 13-8. A slight scare for Liverpool against Villarreal, Mark?
They were terrible in the first half of Liverpool. I can't remember the last time I saw them play that badly.
Just looked flustered, didn't they?
They really did. The midfield was all over the place. You know, I always think that Henderson is not obviously the most talented of the midfielders, but the pressure he puts on, the support he gives Alexander-Arnold, I think always when I look at that Liverpool team, I always prefer it, if I'm sort of looking to be pro-Liverpool, for Henderson to be in there, just because of the work that he does and the standards that he kind of sets for the rest of the team. It was a dreadful first half performance from Liverpool. In some respects, I suppose they were a little bit lucky, because I don't think it was a penalty that when Lo Celso went through against Alisson, but it could quite easily have been one. You know, maybe one more touch from Lo Celso, it could have been a penalty and a red card, and then you might be out of the Champions League. So Jurgen Klopp said at halftime, we usually like to show players, like, you know, as a group, kind of stuff that they've done well in the first half, at least one bit. He said he didn't have one clip to show them. The sort of substitutions really helped. Rui, the goalkeeper for Villarreal, I mean, he'd been shocking previously. I don't know how you know, he sort of got a team to the semi-final. Always looked like he was about to make a mistake. And
we were giggling, weren't we? We were messaging through the game, and I always like double checking my opinion with you just to make sure I'm not on my own. I was just like, this keeper is woeful. The app I use to look at sort of stats and everything, they're rating players out of 10. I think the highest was Mane with an 8.6. I thought it was generous. Rui got 2.8. I mean, there were just all over the shop.
I mean, he was only at fault for three of the goals. So,
So in terms of the final then, Mark, how are we seeing that one playing out really quickly?
I think Liverpool will win. I think they're a better team than Real Madrid. I mean, I thought PSG would beat Real Madrid. I thought Chelsea would. I thought Man City would. And actually, I'm pretty comfortable with how the vast majority of those three games went. So, I think Liverpool obviously needs to be wary of this Madrid magic, if you like. But I think Liverpool are a better team than Real Madrid.
They've got a Champions League final to look forward to, but it's Tottenham in the Premier League this weekend. That's our match of the day. Liverpool 4-9, Tottenham 6-1, 4-1 the draw, this one at 7:45 on Saturday. That's a strange time, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Probably not a good one, is it, for Spurs? I don't think you want to go to Anfield, but you know, you'd rather go there 12:30 on a Saturday, wouldn't you, rather than 7:45. Atmosphere would be absolutely rocking. I think BT have moved the game because probably for viewing figures, they think it's, you know, decisive in the title race. I'm really looking forward to this game. You know, it's one where potentially you could see Liverpool dropping points. Tottenham need at least one, probably three themselves, really, in this battle for Champions League spots. Two attack-minded teams played out a brilliant game. Do you remember the match earlier on this season that finished 2-2?
And, yes, you know, yeah.
Spurs had a lot of chances. Liverpool were missing quite a few players. Kane probably should have been sent off, so you've got there's bound to be a bit of sort of feisty reaction to that, at least from the crowd. So I'm really, really looking forward to this game. I think it will live up to the billing as well.
I was giggling to myself. I was texting you after the game, and Liverpool had just scored three in the second half. They'd found their way into a Champions League final, and I was like, oh, it's it's your boys up this weekend. And you went like, yeah, I fancy us. I fancy us here. And I never deem you as the most optimistic of Tottenham fans. So what are you seeing in this game there? You just think, okay, we've got a chance here.
Oh, I'd had a few Thatcher's gold by that stage. I'm a bit more sober this morning. What I'm seeing, that I think stylistically, it's a clash that suits Tottenham in many respects. I mean, obviously, they're going up against one of the two best teams in the world, which is a big issue, and you're going to have to defend very well. But Liverpool do leave space in behind, and Tottenham are very good at exploiting space in behind. You know, Son, Kulusevski and Kane, that front three, they actually... You know, they struggle against teams that are very compact and don't allow that space. So, you know, the Brighton and Brentford games were a bit of a real grind for them, and they didn't play well in either of those games. But they've taken 6 points off Man City this season. And I think the game at the Etihad was one really where you saw that kind of Tottenham at their best in terms of that counter-attacking football. But not only counter-attacking football, when they... you know, build up play and then get Kane involved. He drops deep, chips it over the top. You know, that is the space, isn't it, that Trent Alexander-Arnold just leaves all the time. And of course, he'll get lots of opportunities to attack down, a weak spot for Tottenham down that left-hand side. But going forward, Spurs will look to hurt them. The one thing I would say, though, that Tottenham were double-figure odds when they won at Manchester City. They're only 6-1 here. And I would say that the betting odds is a kind of true reflection of the game. I think if you ask people just randomly the outcome of this game, I think sort of more people would kind of be sort of assuming Liverpool will definitely win this game, if that makes sense. Mm. You know, if you did like just a who will win this game poll, I would have thought that it'd probably be something like 80% Liverpool. I think it's a harder game than that for sure. Liverpool favourites probably will win, but I think Spurs have got sort of a sniff, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and of course the narrative around this game leading up to it will be the fact that, you know, Liverpool need to win to stay in the title race. But let's not forget about the top four opportunity for Spurs here. It's a big one for them.
It is, yeah, because, you know, I think most people, when you do your kind of, you know, predicted table from here until the end of the season, I think most people have got this one down as a 0 points for Tottenham, which means that even if they were to win the North London derby, assuming Arsenal beat Leeds, you know, it won't actually matter that much. Tottenham, even if they beat Arsenal on Thursday, would still be behind them, you know, going into the final couple of matches of the season. I think in terms of that, I've always felt that if you get to 70 points, you know, you're really unlucky not to make Champions League. And I think you kind of almost have to just believe the process. So from Spurs' point of view, that means they need to get 9 points from now until the end of the campaign. They've got Arsenal and Burnley at home, Norwich away. They'll be thinking that's where the 9 points come from, and anything at Anfield is a bonus. But if they do manage to win at Liverpool, then you know, the top four is in their hands going into the final sort of stretch, and you know, that is the real comforting thing, isn't it? I mean, Jack, you would have been involved in promotion races before. You know, to have it in your own hands is just what it's all about, really, at this stage.
Absolutely. One man that Tottenham will be fearful of is that of Diaz. He's been sublime since his arrival.
Yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned Henderson sort of, you know, having a positive impact on the game in a way to Villarreal on Tuesday. But I mean, Diaz was probably even more so, wasn't he? He just changed the whole dynamic of that attack with Mane and Salah. And of course, the crazy thing is that Liverpool weren't going to buy Diaz until the summer. They were waiting, you know, and going to spend the money then. It was only when Tottenham had a bid accepted for Diaz that Liverpool then thought, well, we've got to step in. And, you know, it could be Daniel Levy's sort of decision there to go for, or whoever it was, you know, Paratici, the sporting director, whoever's decision at Tottenham it was to go for Diaz might really have helped Liverpool in this quadruple bid, because he's been fantastic. And yeah, Jota's done really well and scores a lot of goals. But I think if you're looking at pure ability, that Diaz, Mane, Salah front three is the one, isn't it?
I'm really intrigued to hear your best bet for this one, Mark.
Yeah, so I'm going to go for Son to score anytime at 3-1. 19 goals this season in the Premier League. Only Salah has got more. And, if you know, Salah's on pens for Liverpool. So in terms of non-penalties, he's actually sort of winning that golden boot race. He scored against City and Liverpool this season already. And he scored at Anfield last season. Quick quiz question. Who was manager of Tottenham when they went to Liverpool last season?
Last season? My goodness, you put me on the spot there. I'm not sure.
Jose Mourinho. It feels like a feels like a lifetime ago.
Football moves so quickly, doesn't it?
It does.
When you
said
quiz question, I was thinking the answer is going to be Martin Jarl, whatever it is.
Yeah. So I mean, but yeah, Son just attacks that space that Trent Alexander sort of vacates. They've scored in 8 of their last 9 Premier League games against Liverpool. I suspect Liverpool will probably win the game, but you know, just in terms of sort of a bet that could last you 90 minutes at a fair old price, I think it will be a high scoring game. So Heung-min Son to score at 3-1.
There we go. That's our match of the day. Let's get Mark's best bets for the rest of the Premier League fixtures. Oh, football moves quickly. Let's talk about the relegation scrap then, because it's Burnley against Villa on Saturday at 3 o'clock. We tweeted on Racing Post Sport to get your thoughts. Who do you think will be relegated out of Leeds, Everton or Burnley? 61% of the close to 250 votes believe that Leeds United will be playing Championship football next season. 27% of the vote went for Everton. The minority, 12%. Think that Burnley will be relegated. Mark, I feel as if the last 3 weeks of Bets Club's episode, we have been convinced that a different team will be going down. And once again, the fixtures last weekend has thrown up something different.
Yeah. Do you still fancy Brentford, or are you ruling them at them?
Give it one more week and then I might start to convert. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Sam got in. Do you remember last week Sam said, you know, it'd be great if you could tell me it's not Leeds going down. And he's got in touch again this week to say, can you still reassure me that we're not going down? I mean, you know, it changes. It does change all the time. Do you know, I know now that everyone sort of is, oh, you know, it's doom and gloom for Leeds. And it is. Of course, it's a miserable time of it. I do wonder, though, whether we may be overrating Everton, you know, that victory over Chelsea. And I think from a betting point of view, I'd probably rather be on Everton now. But I'd say in terms of who's the most likely to go down, you know, it is Leeds at the moment. But I wouldn't be amazed if they got something at the Emirates, Jack. But in terms of this game, Burnley against Aston Villa, I think Burnley's good run's just going to carry on. I was looking at this. I was a bit surprised they were outsiders, you know, in this game. So I'm going to go for Burnley. I'm going to go for Burnley draw no bet. They're more expansive now under Michael Jackson. No doubt about that. We've got a piece on racingpost.com that will be published on sort of Thursday evening from our analyst, Simon Giles, who sort of looked at Burnley's expected goal figures sort of under Dyche and then sort of in this very brief period under Jackson. And under Jackson, they've posted an expected goals figure of at least one in every game. Now, they were against non-Big Six opponents, but Sean Dyche did that in only 50% of his time. So we're not sort of factoring in all of those games under Dyche. So I do think there's been a more positive sort of way of playing from Burnley. I'm not sure about Aston Villa really not playing well at all. They were far from impressive when beating your boys last week. And I think the extra motivation here can sort of get Burnley the victory.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's just quickly remind you of how the bottom of the table looks. Watford and Norwich gone, sadly. Burnley on 34, Leeds on 34 points. Everton 18th on 32 points, but with a game in hand. It is all still to play for. We'll talk about those latter two clubs shortly. Next fixture up in the Premier League, Brentford against Southampton.
Yeah, I'm going to go for Brentford to win. Southampton lost 7 of their last 10. And I think Brentford will bounce back from that Man United defeat on Monday.
Chelsea Wolves, still confused about where we're sitting with Chelsea, I must say.
Yeah, I was going to go for Chelsea to win and under 3.5 goals here. I mean, Wolves are down to 17th now on FB Ref's expected goal difference. So that's not a place you want to be. But if you have a look at it, every road defeat they've had this season was under 3.5 goals. And 14 of the 17 were under 2.5. So not offering much in attack. Rarely get absolutely thrashed. So, you know, Chelsea to win a game of two teams that are not finishing the season particularly well.
Last of the 3 o'clock kickoffs on Saturday, Palace host Watford.
Yeah, Crystal Palace to win. I mean, I think Watford have been an embarrassment. You know, Norwich get a lot of stick for the way that, you know, they haven't had a go and all of this stuff. I mean, Watford been terrible, absolutely useless for under Roy Hodgson. I mean, it's just not worked out for them at all, has it? I mean, 9 points from their last 22 games since they got that 4-1 victory over Manchester United. If you don't want to back Palace at sort of odds on, Will Zaha got a bit of previous beef with Watford. Seems to pump him up whenever he plays against them. Scored twice against them last time out. Maybe he can score first. But yeah, Crystal Palace to win.
Was that something to do with the mascot?
The mascot was mocking him for dying.
the Hornet. Yeah, good old Harry. The 5:30 kickoff on Saturday, Brighton at home against Manchester United.
It shows how far United have fallen, doesn't it? The Brighton not far off being favourites to win this game. I was a bit disappointed when I saw the prices. I was hoping we might be able to get a bit of value on Brighton. I'm not sure that they are. I think the prices are about right. And that the draw could well come into play here. There's been 24 in total for Brighton and Manchester United in the Premier League this season.
Let's move on to Sunday's games. And we've mentioned this briefly, but let's get a more in-depth look at Arsenal against Leeds.
Yeah, both teams are scoring over 2.5 goals. I wouldn't be absolutely amazed if Leeds got something here at the Emirates. I'm not brave enough, I don't think, to actually put it up in any way. You can't, can you? If you just fancy something, you can't. You're not allowed to sort of do that on betting sort of podcasts or sort of betting tips. You can't say, I fancy this, and you know, you've got no logical reason for it. But I do think that they can at least be competitive in terms of, you know, troubling Arsenal. But the problem is that Leeds have, you know, they've faced the most shots on target in the league. They just give up a lot of opportunities. I don't think that they played quite as bad as the scoreline suggested against City last week, but you know, ultimately they've ended up getting thumped again. Arsenal, no clean sheet in six for them. So it could be an entertaining afternoon at the Emirates.
Now, if Everton want to survive in the Premier League, they're going to need to get something against Leicester this weekend. They travel there. Again, worth noting, Leicester have European football in the week. Could that be a hindrance for them?
It might be a hindrance, but I think it's factored into the prices. And I'd be, with Leicester for this game. I mean, I would want to at least see how they come out of that game against Roma. You wouldn't want extra time or something like that, a couple of injuries. But, I mean, just as we speak now, I think that it's enough recovery time just in terms of, I don't see Brendan Rodgers resting everyone. I mean, he did for that game against Spurs, but that's in between two legs rather than after them. I mean, Everton, they've lost 12 and drawn one of their last 13 away games against top flight teams. I mean, they've been a joke away from home. I know that they're battling a little bit harder now than they were maybe a few weeks ago. But yeah, Leicester looked a fair price to me, I think, given the sort of ability of both teams.
Okay. How about Norwich against West Ham?
Yeah, West Ham, 5-6. I'm thinking, yes, please. They've got this big game in the Europa League on Thursday against Eintracht Frankfurt. Same caveat sort of here, really. You wouldn't want extra time, penalties, Declan Rice injury, bits like that. But assuming they can come through it relatively unscathed, I thought that the price was fair enough. I know they've only got 1 point in their last four games, West Ham, but I think it's very different sort of judging a team in between these cup sort of European games than it is after them, because I don't really see a reason for Moyes to suddenly rest loads of players after a European game. It's been a pretty tough fixture list for West Ham. They've had to play Chelsea and Arsenal in recent times. I mean, Norwich have got 4 points from their last 11 games. So, they're bottom of the table for a reason. And Yeah, a slight odds on West Ham felt like a big price to me.
Manchester City could be trailing Liverpool by the time that they play, and they welcome Newcastle to the Etihad. We spoke last week, didn't we, about Liverpool's potential banana skin against Newcastle. They got through in the end. Manchester City now have that task.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was probably more comfortable than the 1-0 suggested for Liverpool. I'm going to go for Newcastle plus two on the Asian handicap. You get your money back if Newcastle lose by two goals. You win if they lose by one or don't lose at all. And your bet's a loser if Man City win by three or more. I think it's a tough old ask for City to, you know, absolutely tonk Newcastle so soon after what happened at the Bernabeu on Wednesday. You know, went to extra time and looked to be some real tired legs in that sort of the City ranks, didn't they, towards the end of that game. They didn't put up too much in the way of chances in extra time, for instance. So got to recover. I also wonder if they're sort of winning by one goal, whether they get a little bit nervous and start playing sort of really defensively to hold on. I think Eddie Howe's doing a good old job at Newcastle. There are obvious limitations when you're coming up against sort of the calibre that they did last week and this week. But I think they'll do enough to stay competitive. You know, I think they've got their eye on trying to finish in the top 10. And, they're not on the beach, I would say, at the moment.
OK, excellent stuff. That's the Premier League covered off. Let's talk EFL with Dan Childs.
And now we're joined by EFL expert Dan Childs. Dan, we're going to start with Bournemouth gaining promotion to the Premier League, a dramatic and it's tension-filled 1-0 success over Nottingham Forest on Tuesday, sort of sealed the deal for them. How do you think they'll do in the Premier League next year?
I think a lot of it depend on how they recruit in the summer. I mean, they've had sort of two seasons out of the Premier League now, so you know players like Dan Juma, you know, they had to let go. Obviously went on to Villarreal. I mean, Solanke's come in and scored a lot of goals for him. Looks like he's probably now a bit of a late bloomer in his career. He's sort of, you know, approaching his mid-20s now, but, you know, maybe looks like he could, he's got the physique and the finishing now to do well in the Prem for them. Got some good young players, the likes of Jaden Anthony, Jordan Zamora, who are coming through for them. But I do think, a little bit more, it would depend on how they recruit in the summer. Such a big gap, I think, these days between the top flight and the Premier League, as we've been seeing from how teams like Norwich and Watford, who looked really strong last season, how much they've struggled to hang on to top flight status.
Yeah, I mean, my sort of thoughts on that would be that if they don't bring in sort of another half a team at least, then
I mean, they've got the wherewithal, you know, with the finances probably to do that. But it's how you recruit. It's, who knows?
Okay. We've had Andy and Ian both get in touch actually about the playoffs, but both frustrated that they can't sort of do trebles at the moment, because obviously the League One playoffs are about to begin this evening. So I know the Championship and League Two sort of picture isn't completely clear at the moment, Dan. So, you know, your team you select here might go up automatically, they might miss out altogether. But if you had to sort of put one up at the moment for the Championship and then another one for League Two, where do you sort of think you'd be heading? I've put those caveats in. So,
I mean, for the Championship, even though that we're not sure, you know, exactly who the teams are going to be, I'll be pretty strong for Nottingham Forest. I mean, often the team that kind of just misses out, you worry about how they're going to handle it mentally. But I mean, they've not exactly you know dropped the ball, have they? They've won 9 of their last 11 games. Nottingham Forest, you know, fantastic effort to do as well as they've done. I think they were right down near the bottom. When Steve Cooper came in after 8 games, you know, if you'd have said then, you know, that they'd have any chance of getting into the playoffs, let alone, you know, being, you know, on course to finish third, you'd have been over the moon with that. I've just think they've got so many good players, and, you know, quite a few of them on loan. Jordan Spence, the wing back from Middlesbrough, he's going to be attracting interest from a lot of big clubs in the summer. Zinchenko on loan from Watford's been, you know, great in a kind of like a playmaker number 10 position. Three really good centre backs with McKenna, Worrell and Steve Cook. You know, to me, they're ticking most of the boxes. And I look at the competition. I mean, Huddersfield have done great, you know, to get as many points as they have. But I'll compare the two teams. Forest from here are a lot stronger. Sheffield United have sort of, you know, done better in the second half of the season. You know, they may get into the playoffs, but they've still got to play Fulham at home, you know, and potentially have to win that game to get in. Luton seem to be dipping towards the end of the season and they've got injuries piling up at that 7-0 defeat at Fulham. So maybe an alternative to Forest, if they get in, could be Middlesbrough. I mean, that Middlesbrough had a bit of a wobble recently. But if you look at their overall form since the change of manager, they have done very well under Chris Wilder. Maybe if they can sneak in with a win at Preston and Luton, maybe drop points, maybe they could give Forest a run for their money.
Cool. And then in League Two, that picture's not clear at all.
Yeah, but even less clear in League Two. Yeah, yeah.
But is there anyone you're sort of thinking, if they're in, I like them, or you know, if they're in, I'd be against them?
I mean, I would be. I've been sweet on sort of Bristol Rovers and Mansfield, you know, during the run-in. I mean, one of them might go up automatic. Well, both of them are mathematically capable of going up automatic, but Mansfield have got to overtake Northampton and Bristol Rovers. And given that Bristol Rovers are playing at home to Scunthorpe on the last day of the season, Mansfield, you've got to assume are going to be in the playoffs. So it's out of Northampton and Bristol Rovers to go up automatic. They're on the same points. Northampton have got 5 goals, a better goal difference. But Bristol Rovers, given they're playing at home to Scunthorpe, Northampton are at Barrow, you could see it. You know, you wouldn't be completely ridiculous if Bristol Rovers won 6 or 7 at home to Scunthorpe, knowing the goals that they need. But if Bristol Rovers miss out on that top three, I would fancy them strongly in the playoffs, to cut a long story short. If Northampton drop in, given that they've been kind of, you know, in pole position for top three for a long time, I think that could affect them mentally. And then I would maybe look at Mansfield, you know, possibly as my League Two playoff team. Swindon, I think, concede too many goals. Sutton and Tranmere, you know, may well miss out. They're outside the top 7 at the moment.
Okay, so to recap there, for those that want to know Dan's playoff selections, albeit that we're not entirely sure what the field is as it stands, it'd be Nottingham Forest and Bristol Rovers if they're in it. If Bristol Rovers go up, then maybe look to Mansfield. And on racingpost.com at the moment, Dan's League One preview is already up there, and he's gone for Sheffield Wednesday to win the promotion back to the Championship. In terms of the best bets for this weekend, Dan, how many selections have you got? Because obviously a slightly shorter coupon, I suppose.
Yeah, shorter coupon. I've still got the 3, and I'll start off with a Championship and with Nottingham Forest away to Hull. I know they can't make automatic now, so the price has sort of edged out a little bit. They're now, you know, they're still odds on, but they're about 17 to 20 to win away to Hull. I still think they're going to want to go there and win. I don't think Steve Cooper's going to want to go into the playoffs on the back of 2 successive defeats, especially given they've been on such a great run. They're going to want to get back to winning ways. And also, I think looking at the table, he's probably going to be looking at it and assuming if the likes of Luton and Sheffield United, Sheffield United are 5th, Luton are 6th, if they win their home games and the positions stay the same, I get the feeling Forest would much rather play the 6th place team, which could well be Luton, rather than playing Sheffield United in a playoff semi-final. So that means Forest need to win to make sure they finish 3rd. You know, I think they'll go quite strong. And Hull, I mean, they've had quite a poor season. Under new owners now, you can expect a big clear out, I think, in the summer with, you know, Shota Arveladze is going to be, you know, looks like he'll be given plenty of money to spend there. But you look at this season, you know, very, you know, difficult season on the whole, very poor at home, 12 losses at home, which is the joint highest. If they lose to Forest, it'll actually be the highest, you know, number of home defeats in the division. I think it will come to that, Forest to win that one.
Okay, and your other 2 selections?
Yeah, both. Well, obviously, got both League Two, League One, League campaigns finished. So, 2 in League Two, starting off with Harrogate at home to playoff chasing Sutton. I actually think Harrogate could win this at quite a big price. You often get cases where teams with, you know, supposedly nothing to play for are available at big prices. Harrogate are around 7-2 to win at home to Sutton. They're not. They don't look like they're on the beach at the moment to me. They've won their last 2 matches, 3-0 at home to Carlisle, and then 3-1 last weekend away to Forest Green, who were going for the title. So Harrogate, you know, look like they're up for finishing the season strongly. They're 17th. Another little note there to look at is that they're 17th, which is the same place as last year. But bearing in mind, last year was their first season in the EFL. If they win the game, that could give them their highest ever EFL finish, which from their club's point of view could be quite a big deal. Sutton have dropped out of the playoffs last weekend with a really bad 4-1 loss at home to Bradford. They had a few injury problems going into that game, including the captain, Craig Eastmond, who's missed the last couple of games. They've struggled generally away from home as well. 7 league wins away from home and 10 defeats. I think every chance they could lose this game at Harrogate, which could finish their playoff dream.
Okay, so we've got Forest, we've got Harrogate, and who's the last team?
Yeah, last one. I mean, it's a game between Stevenage at home to Salford. Two teams that can't go up, can't go down. Stevenage have been fighting relegation. Salford have been trying to get into the playoffs. But I actually think the home side here, Stevenage, could win the game at around about 19-10. So they're being priced up as slight outsiders. Since Steve Evans has gone in there about a month ago, they have improved, especially their home form. They've won their last two home matches, beat Rochdale 1-0 at home, beat Tranmere 2-0 at home. That's got them safe from the threat of relegation. I still think they'll want to, I often think teams want to finish strong, though, in their last home game in front of their home supporters. This may give them the edge over Salford, whose their playoff chances were officially finished on Monday when they drew 2-2 at home to Mansfield. I think, given that this is the first game since their promotion chances have disappeared, you can expect maybe a dip in the performance from Salford, and that could allow Stevenage to win this game.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks to Dan, as always. Mark, let's get to your best bets now, and we're flying form-wise. Let's start with the prop shop.
Yeah, this is the one that's not been hitting. This isn't a Ben Davies type situation, so I'm not going to stick with it forever. But I am going to give Dwight McNeil another go. I'm going to split stakes here, anytime goal and also an assist. He had another 2 shots last week against Watford, and I saw some quotes from him on sort of speaking about Mike Jackson, saying he's given me the confidence back. He's got me believing in myself. He's given me guidance and freedom to go and get on the ball. And I really think he's playing, you know, well at the moment. So, Dwight McNeil in a couple of different markets there.
Okay, great stuff. How about a long shot?
Fulham. Now, they might be on the beach or certainly been in the pub, having first got promoted, then won the league. But Sheffield United need the win to be sort of in the top 6. So you understand why they're the price they are. But Fulham are 11-4. And I'm just, you're prepared to take a chance on that. You know that they're not going to be, you know, absolutely trying 100%. They will probably dip in ability, but this is a team that's got 90 points over 100 goals. They've got a lot of ability. So even if they drop some, some way off, I still think 11-4 might be, might be overpriced.
Yeah, that's a fascinating angle. What have you made of Mitrovic this season? Do you think it will click in the Premier League for him?
I think there's more chance of it doing it now because, you know, I like the football that they play. And I'm not quite sure what hasn't worked out for him before. I think he's sort of not an outstanding striker, but he's been an absolute no-show, hasn't he? I suspect that Marco Silva will probably try to build the team more around him. Scott Parker lost patience, didn't he, with Mitrovic and went for a more speedy attack. I suspect that Marco Silva will try to maybe, build a team that gets the best out of Mitrovic. I think he'll do well. He's obviously not going to tear it up. I think he's a little bit too old to suddenly start doing that now. But I've always liked him. He's paid enough money to score a lot of goals, but I always, even when he was at Newcastle, he's a player I've always kind of felt like there's more there.
An astonishing season nonetheless. It was a winning treble again last week, Mark, so that's 3 in 4. Well done.
Thank you. So this week, all Premier League, Crystal Palace to beat Watford, and then going for over 2.5 goals in Liverpool against Tottenham and Arsenal against Leeds. In terms of Leeds, every game they've played against the top 7 has been over 2.5 goals this season. You know, defensively, you just can't trust them. And in terms of Liverpool against Spurs, 8 of the last 9 Premier League meetings also gone over 2.5. So hopefully plenty of goals in the North London clubs' matches this weekend.
And not only are the trebles going really well at the moment, so are the naps.
Yeah, this one here, I was going, shall I go for West Ham? I do want to see what happens to them on Thursday. I think the next safest option until that happens is Crystal Palace. Like I think Watford have had a really easy ride from the media in terms of how bad they've been. I don't know if it's because, you know, Roy Hodgson's on this kind of last, he's on like a lap of honour, isn't he, really, before he does retire. But their managerial choices, I mean, Claudio Ranieri and Roy Hodgson, I used to admire Watford for being brave in sort of their managerial sort of, you know, choices. But the last two appointments have been jokes.
There we go. Let's get on to your questions. And my goodness, there's a lot of them this week. I really like it when we have certain themes with our Twitter questions. And I know Mark's been tipping up a lot of Asian handicap type bets in recent weeks. So we've had a lot come in regarding that kind of market. There's been so many. We're going to make it a special subsection. That's a mouthful. Next week. So stick around. Make sure you're subscribed to Bets Club on whatever podcast player you use. And we will get on to that. But for now, let's start with Guy. Guy Dufton on Twitter asks, Mark, which teams have surprised you for good or bad this season?
Okay, yeah, well, we'll start with the bad. I mean, Bradford. You know, I was pretty strong on Bradford in various markets. You know, back in the summer, I thought they had the right manager. You know, it's one that had done well. Derek Adams, you know, he'd taken a team with a much smaller budget in Morecambe right up. You know, he's somebody that had success at that level previously with Plymouth. They've got a big budget. It just felt like, you know, it was all there really for Bradford, even if they weren't going to win the division. You know, for top seven, and they've been shocking for much of the season. I did have a laugh though because Aaron Ashley, my colleague at the Racing Post, tipped Bradford to be the top northern club, and they actually go to the last game of the season with the destiny in their own hands to be the top northern club, despite being absolutely useless. He tipped them at evens to be the top northern club. Then they're 10 to 11 to win at the weekend that would do it. So he's got the value anyway. There's, and in terms of who's been better than I expected, probably Serie A leaders, Milan, did not expect this. Even halfway through the season, just assumed that they would fall off the pace, be reeled in by their City rivals into battled it out for another. Sort of, it was a narrow and close run thing last week, but they got the goal. They built a new young team. You know, Tomori's doing excellently at the back. Rafael Leao is somebody I like for them, sort of in the wide forward positions as well. So they would be the two.
Okay, there you go, Guy. There's your answer. Daniel's got in touch to say, do you have any early fancies for the Ballon d'Or winner? Benzema feels really short to me, and I'd much rather split my stakes on Mo Salah and Sadio Mane.
I haven't got a sort of strong fancy for this. I pretty much assume, I suppose, that Benzema will win. There seems to be a lot of hype around him. I just checked and Messi's 25 to 1. I mean, I'm pretty sure most people just seem to fill it in almost off a template and give Messi, you know, like a place in their voting. I feel like I definitely wouldn't. I know it sounds stupid because he's been, you know, he hasn't done much for Paris Saint-Germain this year, but I don't know. I mean, I'd probably rather back him than, I mean, Salah and Mane, I don't know if they're sort of sexy enough players in terms of picking up that worldwide vote. And that's wrong because I think talent wise, they probably should. But it's very much a hype machine, isn't it? And Benzema has got a lot of support behind him and, you know, probably will win.
There you go, Daniel. Stuart wants some confirmation on his hunt. He says, are Wrexham the best playoff bet at even money? Better strike force than the rest of league two, never mind non-league.
Yeah, Stuart's very sweet on Wrexham. I can understand why. They have obviously, you know, spent a lot of money, got a lot of quality, but and they're not actually sort of, you know, maybe that there's still a tiny chance they might go up automatically, I suppose. I just looked at their last six games, and the National League's not a league I follow closely, so I don't know the ins and outs of it really. But last six games, Wrexham, including that, they've drawn with Solihull and 10-man Boreham Wood and lost at Woking. So that would sort of make me think that they're not absolutely going to dot up in the playoffs. I mean, Solihull, for instance, have had one defeat in 20, and that was against Leeds Stockport 1-0 in the last minute. So I understand that Wrexham have got, you know, all the kind of talent that you need. Just in the playoffs, you know, a lot can go wrong. So I don't know. I certainly wouldn't be backing sort of them at evens in the playoffs. But, you know, like I say, it's not a league I follow massively closely enough to know about sort of, you know, the underlying data and bits like that.
Alistair's got in touch to say, do you think too much pressure is put on kids in academy football? And also, we'll get onto this after it, what do you bet on in the summer? Mark, did I hear you mention last week that you had a brief spell for a club when you were younger?
I was at QPR for a few years. Many are chosen, but few are called. I think was what one of my managers sort of described it when most of us at sort of Saturday and Sunday level were sort of at clubs that, you know, played at pretty high standard sort of Saturday and Sunday league, and most were you know, on the verge or being picked up by clubs. So it's too much.
Did you feel too much pressure?
I didn't feel massive. I wouldn't say I felt pressure. I didn't enjoy it as much as I did sort of, you know, just playing with my mates sort of a weekend, sort of, you know, like in terms of that, you know, sort of the normal club environment, if you like. So maybe that is pressure and didn't realise it at the time. I certainly think that once you get to sort of 17, 18, it feels like, yeah, there is a lot of pressure, but I don't know how you would change that. I mean, it's such a competitive sort of area to get into. I mean, it's going to be pressurized, isn't it? I don't see how it can't be. There maybe needs to be a bit more support for those that are that, you know, let go. I mean, I'd hope it's a sort of bit better than it was sort of back in my day when the coach, actually quite a well-known coach, I won't say who, he just told my dad, just said, oh, like, you know, that's it, you know, no need to come back type thing, after a good few years there. So, and then my dad had to tell me, which is not a nice situation, obviously. So, yeah, I think that maybe there needs to be better aftercare put in. It didn't bother me overly. I was more sort of thinking, I'm not a nice thing for my dad to have to do. In terms of what do I bet on in the summer, I mean, I do like to take a breather. I could have had a joke there and said, oh, academy football. But I think what the one sport I do like in the summer is baseball. So I'll probably have a good old go on that.
Baseball. I think, on that first point, I think what has improved over probably the past decade but still needs work is the vast majority of those that are playing football to a high standard, high enough to get into an academy, very few of them will make it to a level that will, you know, earn them decent money to live on. So they need support in finding other career paths that are linked to what they've been doing all their life. And I think that has got better, but you still see, especially if you're released at 16 or something and don't get that professional contract, what do you do then? Because you've spent your entire childhood expecting that you're going to be, you know, the next big thing in the Premier League. So, yeah, work to do. Mick Green, how confident are you on Feyenoord? I followed you in at 12-1. Yeah, that was a fancy for you about a month ago, wasn't it, Mark?
Yeah, in the Europa Conference. Got a big game tonight against Marseille. I mean, can't ask for too much more. They've got a lead. I wouldn't say I'm, you know, hugely confident, but I think they've given us a good run at 12-1. So, come on, you Feyenoord.
Yeah,
come best on, you Rotterdams.
Best of luck to Mick and Mark, double M. Niall, do you ever have a go at huge odds wins like Steve Palmer's face spitter? What's the best type of football bet to go for this? Now, for those that don't know what Steve Palmer's face spitter is, we probably need clarification on this, Mark. We need it in context.
Yeah, so Steve Palmer, obviously Racing Post golf tipster, he quite often does transatlantic doubles. So, you know, somebody to win in Europe, somebody to win in the US. And it would enable him, if both were to win, for him to be able to spit in the face of his boss and quit his job because he's going to win so much money. I think, you know, the best opportunity in terms of trying to do that in football, and I'll have a go once a year, really, and it's in the anti-post markets. You know, you can get
you know, if you can get the sort of, I don't know, Championship, League One, League Two, National League winner, not easy to do. But if you can do that, you know, it could be, huge odds because, you know, in terms of those divisions, you can get big price winners, can't you? I think it's a little bit different in the Premier League. I know Leicester won it at 5,000 to one, but you're probably not going to put them in accumulators, are you, realistically? So, but even that sort of that kind of EFL level, you could get 6 to 1 multiplied by 6 to 1 multiplied by 6 to 1, maybe multiplied by 10 to one or something. And, you know, you got some really good bets and big wins. So is really the only opportunity to do it. So get studying over the summer, Niall, and, give it a crack. The other one that I used to like, I haven't done it actually for this World Cup, would be like a direct debit style bet where every month you just put a comfortable amount on, money that you're maybe not going to miss, if you like, on like a team to win a World Cup 2 years in advance. And you can really build up, a nice big position on somebody without it kind of feeling like you've spent that as much money, if you know what I mean, £5 or £10 a month, £20, whatever it is, and you just build it up and it quickly stacks up, over a couple of years.
I suppose it's similar to those who build, Cheltenham portfolios almost, the day after the previous one has finished. So, yeah, that's a nice idea, Mark. Thanks so much once again for all of your questions. As I say, if you have tweeted us in regards to Asian handicaps, how they work, to get Mark's advice on it, we will be covering that next week. So make sure you stay tuned for that. As always, a big thank you from Mark and myself. Please only gamble with money that you can afford to lose. That's really important. Mark's put a lot of selections up in this episode. As always, please don't feel the need to back them all. Stay safe, have a good day, and we'll see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.